Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
This holiday season, we are delighted to wish you and your family all the very best with our podcast sponsor and partner, Electrify America. What a year of milestones for Electrify America. On average, they've opened 4 charging stations per week since May 2018. They started construction on their 800th charging station this year, expanded across 46 states and Washington, D.C. They installed battery storage systems at over 150 D.C. charging stations. And earlier this year, Electrify America announced its Boost plan to double its current EV charging network, with plans to install 1,800 stations and 10,000 individual chargers by 2025. And if you're on the road this holiday season and need to charge your EV, well, the Electrify America mobile app offers electric vehicle drivers a streamlined charging experience, whether you tap to pay at the NFC reader or swipe to start at the station. So download it now if you haven't already. Well, you can find out more about their network at electrifyamerica.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for December the 31st, 2021. This is episode number 91. Happy New Year! All right, on today's show, we're going to talk about all the cars coming to the U.S. in 2022. I'm Dominic Ghioni, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is the très chic and cosmopolitan Tom Malogny, Inside EV's editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the magnificent Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which, of course, is available on all your best podcast platforms. And Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together vivacious videos for the Inside EV's YouTube channel. Okay. So before we get going, I'd like to ask that you please subscribe to the show. We've just hit 33,300 subscribers, and we really appreciate that. It's been very helpful. But if you're not subscribed yet, please do, and hit that bell icon for notifications. So if we pop up with a midweek show, you'll get word of it. Mm-hmm. And if you're watching us on Twitch, you can also ring that bell icon for notifications. All right. So with that out of the way, welcome everybody. Happy New Year.
Welcome right. New Year.
I'm not sure if anybody else is celebrating today, but I've had this like bottle of cold brew Jägermeister in my fridge for like a year. And I couldn't find the right occasion to drink any of it. And like New Year's morning sounds as good as it's going to get.
Because, yeah.
You know, I can't drink like cold brew stuff at night because, you know, you don't want it to keep you up.
According to my car, it is New Year's Day already, so blame the Chinese. I wonder if anyone else's MG ZS EV says the 1st of 2022. Clearly, they didn't ask how many days were in December, and it's clicked over. It says it's Saturday already. It really confused me when I got in there this morning. Have I missed the podcast yesterday?
I've forgotten that you had that MG. That's the ZS, right?
Yeah.
ZS.
Yeah, I love it. It's terrible. I absolutely love it. You've got to lock the doors before the charging will start on AC. Half the time when you engage drive or reverse, the automatic handbrake doesn't let go. So you're in the habit of just engaging gear. You put your foot down, nothing's happening. So then you've got to put your foot on the brake, manually let the it's awful. I love it in every possible way because it's quirky and terrible and brilliant. And I'm having the time of my life in it. But awesome.
Right on. So I don't know if we've driven anything electric this week that we want to talk about. Kyle, I don't know if you were driving anything electric, but you were in the camper van in Wyoming or something, bringing back a rescue dog.
We just went out there for vacation. We wanted to get to some snow. It's the end of the year. We haven't had any serious snowfall here in the Front Range in Colorado.
Right.
And decided to go up to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, where they have like tons of snow, and it was great.
Right. Can I just say though, a couple of weeks ago. Your other half, Alyssa, took over the channel, either Out of Spec Motoring or Reviews, and to do a doggo rescue.
Yeah, on motoring, yep.
And I got to say, mate, I think you're surplus to requirements now. She did a far better job than you do. So
that's good. She should do that. I don't really have, you know, so much time now to road trip, so I wanted her to get better at it. And so now this is the struggle that we're going through. We're in car shopping mode here.
Okay.
And so
perfect.
She wants an SUV. We both agree it should be electric so she can make YouTube videos with it for motoring to do these road trip videos. And there's not many big electric SUVs on the market. There's e-tron, which is our top choice. Yep. There's Model X, which wouldn't be bad, but the charging curve isn't great. And I think our non-Tesla road trip videos actually perform better. But Model X is very much a contender. Model Y is probably a bit too small, especially with the sloping roof back. And I think that's kind of it. R1S is years away at this point. That would really be the perfect vehicle
for some. Maybe you could find someone who won't accept their, you know, has a pre-order. Something happens, you know.
Yeah, $50,000 over to transfer the reservation or something crazy. No, I vowed to not pay over sticker for a car, at least a mass production car.
Sure.
And so that car, they'll make as many as they can. So don't pay over sticker for anything. If you don't have the time to wait for a car, then there you go. But Hummer EV, but that's not great. XC40 Recharge is way too small, unfortunately.
XC90
would be
all electric coming this year. That's in our list.
A move.
We're going to be talking about 2022 cars, and that's the very bottom on the list because there's not a whole lot of info out there about it. But.
Yes, Kyle Simon mentioned, how about the BMW iX? I know you haven't driven it yet, but.
Yeah, I haven't driven it, and you can't get it right now. We need a car like now.
Yeah, is that's not coming this year, right? I don't think that's on my list.
Sure it is.
They're already out and about in Europe, right?
I mean, they're out here, so yeah.
Yeah, they're coming in January, Dom. I proofed that list. I missed it. Sorry.
How did I miss that? Oh, my God. Let me just write that in here.
Well, it's okay. It's not on the list. We'll talk about those cars anyway.
iX would not be a bad car, Tom. That's a great suggestion if it's coming that soon. That might be on the list.
In like a month.
That's pretty interesting to me.
Yeah. I just don't know. They're saying the availability has been like, you know, they're sold out. But, you know, you never know what that translates to. But when there's always going to be cars that people order, they get to the dealer for whatever the reason the customer backs out.
Oh, yeah. I'm not worried about that. It's the non-dealership model that scares me of getting a car soon. The dealership reservation model, like Hyundai Ioniq 5s, my dad has run into people who have just walked into dealers, gotten them. He has cars at sticker reserved. You know, at the end of the day, the reservation system doesn't work if you have a traditional dealership model. No one's been able to prove it properly. Mach-Es come in, then they get $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 over sticker. You can go to Nebraska. I think we got $2,000 off of Mach-E early on. And so you just got to play around a little bit.
Yeah. So,
Tom, you asked about what we're driving. I just want to get one thing out first. I wasn't driving anything this week. I wasn't even driving my cars.
You're in quarantine.
Yeah, I'm in quarantine. I'm recovering from COVID. I got it pretty bad. I tested positive on Christmas Eve, and I got pneumonia, and I had to go to the emergency center and everything, and I was in bad shape for a couple of days. But I'm on the mend now and here. So now I haven't even been driving my own car this week. And actually, up until yesterday, I wasn't even sure I was going to make it here today because I was just constantly coughing. Wouldn't want to miss this show. This is one of our favorite shows, the end of the year, where we talk about everything coming up next year.
Right. You sold your two last week. It was great. I should mention that you are double vax already, but you don't have the booster, and that can make a big difference.
Yeah. My wife actually got the booster 2 weeks ago, and I didn't. I wasn't able to get it scheduled, and she got COVID from me, and it was like a cold for a day.
Wow.
She just like had a fever. She was a little, she felt like chills for a couple of hours and that was it. She was done. Now, I don't know 100% if it was because of the booster, but I got it really bad. And she was just, it was just like a little cold for a day for her. So, which I'm happy. I'm glad she didn't have to go through what I did. Right. I'm on a cocktail of like five different medications right now. Yeah.
Can I let people into an insight as well into this podcast that they wouldn't realize when, you know, you're just watching this. Tom never misses a show. Now, like, if I have a cold, I'm like, guys, I can't do it. I'm so sorry. If I'm on holiday, I'm like, guys, I can't do it. I'm on holiday. Like, Tom took one vacation this year, And he's going like, well, if I might be at an airport somewhere, I can get Wi-Fi, and I'm going to be at my, I'm like, dude, just, it's fine. And like, so people don't realize what goes into putting this show on the air. And Tom never, ever like wants to miss a show. But guy, Tom, if I was in your situation, as sick as you've been this week, I'd be tucked up in bed somewhere right now watching some Netflix.
Yeah, so, where's your motivation to talk to us? Doesn't this just ruin the start of your weekend?
Listen, it's not just, don't act like I'm the Iron Man of the podcast. Dom's never missed a show.
Oh, well.
Not even one, ever.
Not okay? one.
And the three of us, really, Kyle's only missed, what, like three or four, Kyle, in 2 years?
I have no problem saying I'm not going to make a show. I'm sorry.
I know you don't have a problem with it, but the fact of the matter is you haven't missed many. You've only missed three or four shows,
I've slept in a couple times by accident.
Yeah. Mark, you only missed a couple.
I've wanted
shows.
To sleep in a couple times.
I think the four of us have done really good for all these for 2 years now, shows. Nearly. We've missed very few shows.
So 2021 was our first like full year of podcasts. Like we started in 2020 midway or something. Or
like March, I think, right?
March. Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah,
pretty early on. I mean, we're coming up on the 2 years anniversary of the show. And for the four of us, the four of us have been here 95% of the time.
Yeah, it's been great. And it's great having guests on too sometimes. You know, if somebody can't make it, you know, having Lacey from Mystical Electric on, she's really like enjoy having her. And we've had a few good, you know, good guests, and we probably should have some more sometime. It'd be nice to maybe split the screen up and have like, you know, five or six of us here. And
you can do that.
Yeah. Then, yeah, the more people we have, the less you have to listen to me. So that's great. All right. So we got a list of cars coming for next year, and including the Mercedes IX, apparently. BMW. Oh, man.
Can I mention something really quick about next year, since we're on the topic? You see this little scooter next to me? I've never talked about this thing. This is my little commuting device. I ride this thing everywhere. It's got a flat tire because I'm a little too large for it, but I'm going to fix that. We are starting a new channel called Out of Spec Scoots, and we have like a ton of e-bikes and scooters all being shipped to the new office like this week. And so I figured every week I'd give you a little 30-second update on what I'm riding.
Yeah,
because I'm really into the e-bike thing. I've slept on it. I haven't paid attention. We decided to start covering it. We reached out to everyone. Everyone's sending us their bikes, and it's just going to be insane.
Awesome. I have a specialized Turbo Vado SL. Me and my wife do, and it's awesome. I mean, you know, I live in a very hilly area here in New Jersey, and I hate to admit it, but it's too much for me on a bike without some kind of e-assist. I'll turn left out of my driveway, and in the first mile, I have a 500-foot incline. And it wipes me out before I even start pedaling. And the e-bikes, just for getting up the hills, is so liberating. I can go anywhere on it. And, I only use the e-assist when I'm going up a hill. And if you get a chance, Kyle, if you talk to Specialized, you should see if they'll send you one of those, the Vado Turbo SLs. It's an awesome bike. You have to pedal. It's not like you can, like a throttle where you can just do, do, do.
And it goes up to what, 20 miles an hour? And then it shuts off e-assist, is it?
No, 28.
Oh, really? That's interesting. So there's three classes of e-bikes. There's like class one, which you can't do throttle. It's e-assist only. Right. Class two is throttle to 20 miles an hour. Class three is throttle or e-assist up to 25 or 28, something like that.
I think I'm pretty sure it was 28, but you have to pedal. It's just the assist. It'll never just go on its own. So it makes you work, which is good, which is what I want it to do. I'm not interested.
I just want to sit there and
get a moped, for Christ's sake.
That's what this basically is. This thing, I've tuned this one. It does like almost 30 miles an hour and just sits wide open everywhere. It's great.
It's good to have the option, you know, the throttle. I know it's good to have it's nice to be able to do a workout.
You got
to
shoot a review of it for Out of Spec Scoots.
I've been meaning to for like 2 years. Actually, promised NCIVs I was going to do one because they're like, yeah, we want to start reviewing bikes. I said, well, I have one. I'll make a video review. And it was like a year and a half ago when I first got it. So yeah, it's on my list, but now I'm not riding it too much now. It's really cold here, but excuse me guys. In the spring for sure, Kyle, I'll do that.
Cool. Yeah, we are. Yeah, speaking of cold, we're about to get hammered. So we've had insane fires here in Colorado.
Right.
Totally devastating, really bad situation. We have actually people coming up here to Fort Collins to our house for who knows how long. And, you know, if anyone's displaced, you know, we have plenty of space. Just let us know. Come on up. But yeah, we're about to get hammered with snow. And I heard like feet of snow in some places. So looking forward to getting those Nokian studded Hakka Palitas, the EV specific ones, onto our Tesla. I'll probably do that this afternoon in the garage and shoot a little snowmobiling video with the Model 3.
That'd be awesome, man. I'd like to see the Hakka Palita EV Hakka Palitas. Nice.
EV specific studded winter tires.
Sweet.
Yeah,
I don't have any use for studded tires down here, but man, I'd like to try them out.
They're insane. We used them last winter. I don't know if you guys remember when we drove or rode the Taiga electric snowmobile.
Yeah, just think about the Model 3
up there, and we did a little drag race. But actually, on the way back from the drag race, it was just insanely like icy. Like there was a gotta have been an inch or two thick layer of ice on the road, and like cars were just woof right down the hill, and everyone was stopped. But I'm like, all right, this is either going to work or it's not. We had the studded tires and literally just drove down it like it was nothing. And then we turned around and went up, and then we went back down, and it was insane. Like, look, I'm from the Northeast. You know, I grew up basically in Vermont and have driven in snowy conditions my whole life, but I've never driven studded tires until these, and it made the biggest difference ever. They're really loud on the highway, though. That is the downside of studded tires.
All right. Cool. Hey, so let's dig into this. Let's start with pickup trucks, since this is going to be a big year for those. So, of course, late in 2021, Rivian started delivering the first ones to employees and customers. That's the R1T. And we've just heard that GMC has begun to ship the Hummer EV. So that's not actually on our list because that's 2021, technically. So those deliveries will ramp up considerably, though, through the year. And there are a number of models which will join this significant market segment. And so let's start with the most anticipated, or one of the most, the Ford F-150 Lightning. I believe first deliveries are happening this spring, and here are some of the key numbers. So Ford received about 200,000 reservations, not including orders from fleets, and has now stopped accepting new ones. So in view of its apparent popularity, they've doubled its planned post-ramp-up output to 160,000 vehicles per year. So not this year, but I mean, not next year, but in 2023, they're aiming for 160,000 vehicles a year, which is pretty decent numbers for one model. The F-150 Lightning comes in only in all-wheel drive and has two battery size options, standard range and extended range, with cells supplied by SK Innovations factories in Georgia. EPA range of the smaller pack is 230 miles. EPA range of the large pack is 300 miles. Lowest starting price is $39,974. That's aimed towards commercial buyers. That's the Pro trim, I believe. The XLT trim is geared more toward everyday buyers, and you can get them at the regular dealership, and it starts at $52,974. Those cheaper trims may not be distributed until fall, with the Lariat and Platinum trims being delivered first. The most expensive, I think, is going to be just over $90,000. It would be a Platinum, I would imagine. The 0-60 on the extended range truck is in the mid-4-second range. So, Tom, you've experienced that, but I think you said like the 0-60 is only part of the story, right, with the power?
Yeah, well, to me, you know, it's not a drag strip vehicle. You know, it's right. Fun to say it goes 0-60 in a certain amount of time, but right. You know, how does that pull all the way up? And when Darren Palmer had it out on the track, you know, one of the things he did was at different speeds stomp on it. You know, we were driving at 40 miles an hour, we got on right. It, we're driving at 50 miles an hour, we're driving at 75 miles an hour, we're driving at 80 miles an hour. Each time he would just stomp on it, and it seemed like no matter what speed we were at, we had that same response. It just pulled. So, you know, I think what's it, 775 pound feet of torque. You know, it just, to me, you know, of course you want to get it with a trailer, you want to get it with full load and see how it feels there, but it felt like this thing will be able to pull anything. Now, how far will it be able to pull it at those speeds with that kind of power? That, you know, that's going to be something that we're going to have to test out with towing tests and so forth. But as far as without anything in it, it just pulled at any speed, which was pretty impressive.
Nice. And it's got the, what is that, Power Frunk? It's got a huge frunk
mega
on it.
Mega Power Frunk.
Mega Power Frunk.
Someone's got to make a little bah, 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 Mega Power Frunk.
Exactly.
Martin, you would know how to do that, radio guy.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get that done for the next time we mention the Mega Power
Every
Frunk.
Every time we say it, it's got to go bah, 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 Mega Power Frunk.
Maybe some, you know, some reverb, a bit of echo on there, some sound effects. I can do that. I didn't realize what you just said, Dom. 200,000 reservations, not including Fleet.
Right.
I hadn't heard that before. So the real number's going to be higher. And so their real issue is production constrained. Then this could be another Rivian where, you know, they're so busy making Fleet vehicles for Amazon, they're going to trickle out the consumer vehicles in 2022. Is this going to be the same?
No, they make a lot more margin.
They've got to make a splash.
Yeah, the Fleets are going to be the cheap one.
They make a lot more money on the consumer version, so I think that's going to get the priority. That's where their money is.
I guess where with Amazon, they funded Rivian to get to this stage, so they have to super serve them. So it is different. But you want to see these flying around on the roads. You want to see different ones of all specs. You want to get all that positive social media and YouTube kind of PR of people just trying them out and posting videos. So that's amazing. They're massively production constrained. I'm surprised. I think Ford are surprised. Would you agree?
Because they started off with a low number. They were going to make like 80,000 a year, and they've doubled that, you know. So that's
not next year. So as you said,
right, by 2023, I think they want to hit the 160,000, which is like, those are big numbers. Like, I mean, 80,000 is a good number. But
when you say Ford is surprised, that's throwing a blanket over the whole company. I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think within every company, and you know, we get to talk to executives at all, various levels from all the different companies, there's always groups of people that are, you know, really pro and EV, and you know, are saying like, we're not going to be able to make as many of these. And then you have the other groups, maybe some of the old school people that are like, well, you know, we're not really sure what the demand's going to be yet. So it's, you know, I certainly don't believe that Ford is surprised by this, like the whole company. I think there might be some people, some of the bean counter, some of the people that assign contracts with suppliers because they, you know, they can't overpurchase, they can't underpurchase. They're trying to gauge, you know, exactly how many parts they need to buy for all the vehicles ahead of time before they go into production. They're signing contracts. I think those are the people that might have been taken a little bit surprised by it. But there are certainly people within Ford that knew if they got the F-150 electric right, that they wouldn't be able to make enough of them. So, you know,
that's true. Right.
You know, I think most of the people that are on like Team Edison and the electrification division, like Darren Palmer, for instance, they're not surprised about this tremendous demand.
Right. I would say, you know, as far as like electric vehicles go, you know, whoever makes the most batteries basically wins. I mean, that's the big thing electric vehicles are at the point now where they've got lots of advantages. And so, you know, people are buying them. There's lots of demand. There's lots of demand for vehicles in general right now. So this is a really great time to be trying to sell something new like this. But this is only like the beginning, because batteries are every year, you know, batteries are getting better, you know, but in different systems, like the Hyundai's 800 volt platform now with a super fast charging, 18 minutes to 10 to 90% in like 18 minutes or 80%. You know, it's really terrific. And I think, you know, just going to see this snowballing effect as we move along. I did want to mention about batteries, though, that SK Innovation plant. I was looking at them last night, and man, they're going to make some. SK Innovation is making some big battery plans here in the States. With they have these two smaller plants in Georgia, and they're going to be supplying the Volkswagen ID.4, and that's going to be built in Chattanooga this year, and also this the Ford F-150 Lightning. And this is also, and they have a big thing with Ford, I guess, too, and the new plants. Ford's building them new things in Kentucky and in Tennessee, new electric vehicle centers, manufacturing centers. So that's SK Innovation, man. It's like kind of been sleeping on them for a while. And they've got a new battery coming out that's going to be in the F-150 Lightning. It's a really high nickel content. It's, 90% nickel in the anode? Yeah, I'm not sure. Nickel 9, they're calling it, NCM cells. Anyway, not to get too deep in the weeds on that. But anything else we want to say about the Ford F-150 Lightning.
When's it coming? When do you think? Prediction?
Spring.
Yeah.
Okay.
April to May. And the only other thing we can add is, and this is, it's an unfortunate, but we're going to be seeing it with a lot of the new EVs. Early reports is we're getting that dealers are sending customers emails basically saying that if they want one of these, they're going to spend a lot more than retail. We've seen as much as 30,000 over retail that dealers are saying, hey, you're on our reservation list. Let me know if you're willing to pay this. Otherwise, you know, you're off the list. I know we've talked to Ford about this. I talked to Ford about this a few times. I think Kyle was even with me a little bit at the Mach-E GT drive when we were talking to Darren Palmer about it. I'm not sure if you were with me or not, Kyle, at that moment, but I spoke with him for about a half an hour and, you know, basically said, look, we're doing everything we can to try to, you know, de-incentivize the dealers from doing this, you know, and there's things they can do with allotments and so forth. But he said, ultimately, you know, there's not a lot we can do because, you know, there's very strict dealer franchise laws. I haven't gotten anything back from my dealer, but I've reached out to multiple dealers. I have an F-150 Lightning reservation. I reserved one like the first minute it became available. So I should be one of the early deliveries. I've talked to multiple dealers here, and I have relationships with some of the dealers here because I've trained them with dealer training. So I know the GMs, I even know the owners in some case, and I might be able to be one of the lucky ones that don't pay over MSRP. But that doesn't seem like it's going to be the case for most people, at least in the beginning. That's unfortunate, but, you know, we beat up dealers a lot for charging over MSRP. Nobody complains when they get $5,000 off MSRP, though, because a dealer's stuck with a car that they can't sell. And then, you know, everybody talks about wanting a free market. You know, this is a free market.
Mm-hmm.
It's a free market here. But then at the same, well, I want it a free market when it favors me. I don't want it to be a free market when it favors the other guy on the other side of the negotiating table. So, you know, it's you know, we have to, if we don't want this dealer markups and so forth, we have to totally reinvent how dealer franchise systems work here in the U.S. And that's going to be a tough fight. I think we're stuck with this for quite some time.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. We'll see. But at the end of the day, like if you're a dealer and you only have, like we have some dealers locally here in town who are family owned and they as principal don't charge over sticker. It's why we love working with them at Carroll Motor Company. However, they get like, for example, their Porsche store got like 10 new cars in the last 8 months
or
7 months, something like this. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, if they charged 30, 40 over sticker for a 911 turbo, no one would even blink an eye. People would fly from California out here. What they've done is prioritized their most loyal customers, said, hey, we have a car at sticker. And those are the customers they know aren't going to go around and turn that car used with 100K markup on it. At the end of the day, though, if you're a dealer and you have limited inventory, you need to stay in business and you got to charge over sticker. And if someone's willing to buy the car over sticker, why wouldn't you charge it? Well, there are some reasons like, you know, sort of keeping your customers happy and recurring business. And when they come back to trade in a car in 3 years, maybe they'll be upside down on it because you charge them more money. So there's reasons as to why not to do it. But a lot of dealers are short term, get the sale now, build in as much gross as you can on the deal,
right. And
then send the car out. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. But I don't think the markup thing's actually going to hurt the dealers that much in the long run, to be honest.
We should add that since we made this show at this time last year, the base Model Y is up by $10,500. That's 22%. And the base Model 3 up $8,500. That's 23% from when we last sat down and did this show a year ago. So this is an industry thing. This is a supply issue. This is to do with increasing supply chain costs. So this isn't a Ford thing. You know, we're not beating on Ford or beating on dealerships here. Maybe a little bit.
Some dealers deserve to be beaten.
No, it's really complex. It's a really complex situation.
It's not a black and white situation.
The thing is, Martin, people don't mind as much when the manufacturer raises the price. But they really mind when they feel like they're getting ripped off. That $60,000 vehicle, if Ford said, oh, the truck is $70,000, they'd plunk down their $70,000 and pay for it. But when Ford says it's $60,000 and the dealer's saying, yeah, but you're going to give me an extra $10,000, that's what really drives people mad. They wouldn't mind paying it, but they feel like they're getting ripped off. And that's the crux of the issue there, I think.
And there's more to that too. I mean, a lot of people are stretching into EVs, right? Keep in mind, EVs are still really expensive. So they're taking out loans on these cars, and sometimes 5, 6, 7 year loans we've heard of. Yeah. The problem is when you charge over sticker, your loan to value ratio gets all wonky. Mm-hmm. And now you're trying to finance 110, 115% of vehicle cost, even though you're putting $5,000-$10,000 down, that's still offset by the dealer markup. And some people aren't able to get financing that way. Well, thankfully, financing's cheap right now. Now's the time to go and get financing. It's just the wrong time to buy a car. It's the right time to sell a car.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the show, I mentioned we were looking at e-trons. A year ago, we thought, should we pick one of these up? And we were like, we'll wait for them to tank. Little did we know, they were like, $50,000 for a Prestige back then, Tom. Now they're 65. 65 for the cheapest one.
A friend of mine reached out to me yesterday. He's actually a contractor, and he's at somebody's house, like redoing their kitchen. And he's like, you wouldn't believe it. I'm in this house, and the woman asks me, do I know anything about electric cars? And he's like, no, I don't, but my good friend kind of knows a little bit about this stuff. And she's like, yeah, I'm trying to find an electric Audi e-tron, and I can't. Like, there's none around here. Do you think he can help me? So he gave her my phone number. I haven't talked to her yet, but since you brought it up, she was looking for an e-tron, and you just can't get them right now.
Wow. Yeah, I think there's just huge demand. And actually, even my dad last night texted me. He's like, I maybe want to do that instead of an Ioniq 5 because it's much more comfortable or whatever. And I'm like, okay, what's with the e-tron trend these days? I don't quite understand, but we need it for the space. But I think it's also like I wouldn't get anything but a Prestige because massaging seats, Bang & Olufsen sound system, better leather, you know, better interior lighting. So now we're into this thing for $65,000. I don't mind spending the money as long as it's going to hold its value. But I really doubt that in 2 years that thing is going to be worth 40 G's. I think it's just
plummeting. Right. I did a story this week on my podcast from South Korea where used EVs are now selling for more than new ones because I wonder. If they're having to, I'm surprised because I thought they would prioritize Ioniq 5s and EV6s to their home market. You know, that's where the things are made. But I wonder if they're having to ship them over to Europe to avoid the CO2 fines, whether it just makes more sense to almost penalize their home market. But in South Korea, the used Korean cars, as well as used Teslas, they gave the example of a 3,000 or 5,000 mile Model 3. On for more than a new price, and that's including after you buy the new car, you get the incentive or a subsidy that takes the price down, and then people are selling them after driving them for a couple of months and making a ton of money. Hey, I'm not recommending that you buy and sell cars, EVs as a way of making money, because cars are generally depreciating assets, but we're in a weird, weird time right now.
Right.
Yeah, I think it's pretty risky right now. You can either, if supply chains get worse, values will hold or even maybe go up. But if these are fixed and you plan to keep a car 2 or 3 years, you're really going to get hit hard. We are going to see a time in 3 years from now where a lot of people will be upside down in their cars.
Yeah.
They won't be able to switch out. If they total the vehicle and they don't have gap insurance, they're going to be liable for that difference. It's going to be really a tough situation in a few years if the supply chain's fixed. If it stays terrible, that would not be a bad thing if you're buying a car right now.
Right. But I expect it's going to be fixed and there's going to be a hangover, but we need to get onto this list of vehicles because we got a bunch of them. So let's talk about the Tesla Cybertruck. So this first debuted in November of 2019, so over 2 years ago. And if everything works out, they'll be delivering them by the time the third year anniversary of its debut rolls around. I think most of our listeners and our viewers are somewhat familiar with the Cybertruck. But here's a bit of info to get you up to speed if you've been stationed in Antarctica for the last couple of years. The design is a love it, hate it, still can't decide if it's real type affair. The profile is basically a low altitude triangle sitting on a rectangle. There's a straight line from the front of the hood to the middle of the roof, and where it descends in the back is also a straight line to the top of the bed at the rear. There are no curves, only flat planes. The outer skin or exoskeleton is stainless steel, hardened stainless steel, and supposedly structural. It has a glass roof and a retractable tonneau cover that covers the 6.5-foot bed. It rolls up. It looks pretty cool, too, when you see it roll up. Range is up to 500 miles, and 0 to 60 is as quick as 2.9 seconds. Those are the original specs. It was supposed to come in originally rear-wheel drive, all-wheel drive, or three-motor all-wheel drive. But earlier this month, Elon Musk, the CEO of Tesla, revealed that there will now be a four-motor version, and that will be the first one to ship. He also says it will have tank turn, the ability to spin in place, off-road, we imagine. Like the Rivian, it's supposed to be able to do it at some point. And also, it will have rear-wheel steer, so it can drive diagonally like a crab, which sounds kind of familiar, like the GMC Hummer EV is famous for. They kind of coined the crab walk, you know, it's a term, and, right? So anyway, so the big question is, will Tesla actually deliver any Cybertrucks in 2022? Tom, you took a poll on Twitter last night and got quite a few responses. So what do people think? And also, How many do you think they'll deliver? Since you're one of over the 1.2 million people who've put in a pre-order for $100, so I guess we'll go around and take bets here on how many we think they're going to produce this year.
Sure. Yeah. So I started a poll last night, and actually it has almost 4,000 votes already, and it's running for 2 days. So you guys want, jump over to at Tomalog on Twitter and put your vote in. And so far it's pretty evenly, the results are really even, which is really good. You know, the poll is good when all four responses have very similar percentages, and it's nearly 50-50 now on whether they'll deliver up to 500 or more than 500 units. So I'm going to go with the under. I think we're just going to get a couple ceremonial deliveries, like in sometime in December, maybe end of November, early December, we'll get like 35 Cybertrucks delivered to Tesla employees, maybe a couple VIPs like Tesla usually does. And then we'll really start getting volume delivery rolling up in, like, you know, February or March or something like that. I still think we're a long way off from getting any kind of volume Cybertrucks. The crazy thing is, I have some people commenting on this saying how crazy I am, and that they're going to be delivered more than 150,000 of them in 2022.
No,
one guy I responded to, because if you see that in the poll there, I say the winner, whoever guesses closest, I'm going to send them a 40-amp home charging station. I haven't determined which one yet, but I'll pick one of them that I have in my garage and ship it to the winner, whoever guesses closest. But somebody who said that, you know, he guarantees there's going to deliver 100,000 of them or something like that, I said, I'm going to send you a supercharger if you're right. not a 40-amp home charging station. I'll put a supercharger in your garage if they're right.
Well,
I mean, that would be awesome if they did. But, you know, there's being optimistic, and then there's just smoking something funny. And
right,
if you think Tesla's going to deliver 100,000 Cybertrucks in 2022,
year, no,
you know, you've been on the bottle or got something in your pipe.
Baby, I've been drinking. Yeah, that's a lot. So they're going to make these at the Tesla, the Austin Gigafactory, which, if you've seen the latest videos of, they have drone videos, you know, on YouTube all the time, checking out the building. It's, you know, it's got, the roof is all on it now. It's all enclosed, like the main building, and it's huge. Man, it's an impressively large building. It's pretty crazy. But, you know, they have to make the batteries there. And this is unlike, so they're going to start with Model Y. And with the Model Y, they'll be able to do either 2170 batteries or the new, was it 4680? I believe that's the number. But the Cybertruck, I think, is just going to be 4680. So they're going to be making these batteries at the Gigafactory, but they also have some supply coming from a pilot factory in California, close to to Fremont, or the headquarters. But, you know, what kind of volume of 4680 batteries can they produce, you know, to put these in these Cybertruck by the end of the year? And I don't know, Cybertruck is such a new vehicle, and it's going to be made in a radically different way, I think, from other vehicles, that, you know, I just feel like there's going to be hiccups. I was team zero for this year, and I'm kind of thinking, oh, maybe they're going to have like a couple dozen, you know, like two employees or something. That I could see that happening, but yeah, I feel pretty comfortable with Team Zero. I don't know. Kyle, what do you think?
You guys know I review cars. I'm not great company, you know, a right. great company analyst. I can say I hope they make as many as possible because they're going to be so awesome to see on the road. Look, I think the styling's really wild. It's not for me. I would not probably own one unless it drives or does something amazing. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know, I'm really a Tesla guy. I really want to see these things out and about. I want to see the head-to-heads with F-150, with Rivian, with Hummer EV, et cetera. And,
Silverado. Sorry.
Yeah, Silverado. But that's the same thing as Hummer EV underneath. So, you know, they're the same platform. And so I'm just excited for it. I want to say more than 1,500. Why not? Like, what's stop? Think about Model Y production. They got in there. They got those things done early. We were all blown away by how early and how fast Model Y started. Now, granted, that's basically a Model 3, but with a, you know, blown up a little bit. This is a right. totally new thing, which I'm not even sure if they finished all the engineering for. We've only spotted it right. out on the test track once with this giant windshield wiper, and it looked really stupid. And so I don't know, but I hope they make as many as possible.
Right.
No. Don't cop out. Give us a number for crying out loud. You're on mute. Come on, yell at me. Go off mute to yell at me.
Oh, sorry. It's either going to be like 0 or 50,000. I have no idea.
That's a small range.
Yeah, hey. It's hard to say. I don't know how to predict these things. I'm not good at that. Sure. What I will say, though, is I will be trying to get into one as soon as possible, reviewing it for everyone, sharing how it drives on the road, yes, on the track, and, of course, off-road. We're going to do towing tests. We're developing our own standardized towing range tests and efficiency tests here in Colorado. We're going to have a standard trailer that we're going to use with a standard load that will fit across all the vehicles. So we're going to test it. Yeah. And I can't wait. And if you have a Cybertruck that's coming early and you live in Colorado, let us know so we can test it, because Tesla doesn't give us cars to review. That's why I own
right.
it.
Right. Yeah, they don't give us cars.
By the way, the new
you...
Tesla software update, because I just like totally fangirled over them for a second. Sucks. Whoever designed this new update has never used a car UI before. This V11 thing, it's total garbage.
Yeah, there's there's a lot of people aren't happy with this new UI. This is weird too, because Tesla usually hits it at the park with their UI improvements and adjustments or whatever, but
I think it was
this time there's like a before. Lot of not good. Tom, you're shaking your head.
I haven't been able to figure out how to can the two-zone heating. It has the temperature for the driver and the passenger. I haven't been able to figure out how to have it not in sync.
Oh, I think that's easy. You can just click it and then hit unsync. There's a menu.
I know when every time I click it, I don't see the option for sync and unsync. I've been fiddling with it for like 20 minutes, and I'm so, like, I can't unsync the passenger
side. I'll
be
in the car today. I'm going to check. But I hate that now I have to like hit a button and then go into my heated seats.
So as someone like Tom, who's been in dozens and dozens of cars, owns tons of cars over his lifetime, can't figure out like a simple like a heat seating situation, there's a problem with the UI, I think. I don't know.
But I will say I've been heavily medicated and sick while I was trying to figure it out.
Okay.
So, and he was not driving. He was just sitting at home.
Just sitting in exactly in the garage after the download. I haven't been driving. I haven't gone anywhere. I'm in my house for the last 10 days.
So, Martin, what's your prediction?
On Cybertruck, I don't think they'll ship any to real customers. So I'm caveating again, aren't I? Because, but I think they may ship some to staff or others, but I don't think there's going to be any proper true customers getting their Cybertruck next year, which is a huge shame. I actually watched back this show from last year again, not because I like listening to my voice or looking at my face. I hate watching these shows back, but I did in my spare
Everyone
time.
Everyone feels the same way.
Yeah, thanks. although a quick aside, not that you asked for one, but I was tidying up my garage yesterday for about 8 hours straight. And I just put out of spec motoring or maybe out of spec reviews on shuffle. And I love the fact, Kyle, that you make like 50-minute long reviews of the EQS and the and all the various cars that you do, because although my phone was off because it was kind of resting, I had my earbuds in and stuff, it still kind of worked as a podcast because you describe it all so well. So anyway, that was an aside. I had like eight hours of out of spec yesterday.
Oh, man, that will ruin your day. That's for sure.
That's great. I love listening to Kyle go on. You know, he's so great at it. He stands in front of the car and he'll lay it all out. And like in 30 minutes, he's just like nonstop, just a fountain of information.
Awesome. But no, so Cybertruck relies on 4680 cells. I think they're going to be fabulously hard to scale. So they are making a good amount now on their pilot line, but to do that at scale and then rebuild all that in Texas and Berlin, I don't think we'll see any of those in 2022. Because I watched back the show from last year and we're all saying, wow, Cybertruck's going to be here. We could see the semi-truck and 4680 cells. And then I watched a podcast video thing that Elon Musk did with a guy called Lex. I hadn't heard of him, but I think he's
Lex Fridman,
a big deal in the USA. And he's like, yeah, I definitely think we'll do level 4 autonomy next year. And I had this flashback to like every single year when Elon Musk, I think we'll do level 5 next year. And whether
now he's backing it down to 4.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it wasn't even level 5 like he did with the German magazine when he had that award a year ago. And he did that. He's like, oh, we'll do level 5 next year. This is level 4 next year. And so whether the guy is, you know, a pathological liar or the most endearing optimist, I think will depend on how you feel about the gentleman. But when I watched that, I was like, I was feeling really good about Cybertruck, etc. And I thought, you know what? I'm going to vote 0 on Tom's poll, as people would have seen, because there's a little tick next to the one I voted for. I'm going to vote 0 and just be, you know, a Cybertruck Scrooge and not think any will arrive. But I'll be happily proven wrong if a few thousand get out. I'd love to do that, because I'm, you know, as I've said many times recently, really tired of negative Tesla news. Whether it's the self-inflicted damage over allowing games to be played, and now the NHTSA investigation, which is ongoing, that hasn't stopped, just because they've put a U-turn on that and said, "Oh no, you can't play games anymore in the car." That investigation, now that the ball is rolling, they're not stopping that. They're going to go through that.
Right.
It's an unnecessary amount of admin for somebody somewhere in that company to be replying on headed paper to federal regulators, and now 500,000. Recall, look, you know, it's a voluntary recall for the S and the 3 this week as well. But just let's get away from that negative news. I just think so much of it is self-inflicted pain. I want to get talking about good vehicle stuff as well. And of course, a year ago, we were talking about Plaid Plus. Is that what the name was? The 520 mile Plaid. So that was what we were talking about a year ago. And of course, very quickly after we recorded that podcast, they're like, oh no, we can't actually make that car.
That's true. And they said we can't do that or it's not needed. But the normal Plaid's insane. It's so good.
Right.
It's just the range. It's just the range that they couldn't get from the 18650s and the improvements in chemistry there. But
and I heard track mode is coming to Model S.
That's true. Right.
That's what a beast.
But that's the biggest deal ever. Because if you watch my review of Model S Plaid, it sucked when I drove it fast. Great in a straight line, but really, honestly, objectively and subjectively, bad on a back road. Anyone who drives that car and says it's good hasn't driven anything spicy, I would say. It's fine when you cruise at like 4 or 5 tenths, but when you push it, it sucks. So track mode should solve everything. My biggest concern with track mode is, you know, Model 3 has track mode. I imagine it's going to be very similar. It's going to be really spicy in drift mode. Sometimes you really got to work the wheel in the Model 3 to keep up with it. And having the yoke, which I believe is actually fine for highway driving or daily driving, it's okay. But I was even finding myself on the back road thinking, okay, if I give it way too much throttle because it's got 1,000 horsepower and we have snap oversteer because we're on really meaty tires. Granted, the PS4Ss have a pretty good breakaway, but still it's possible with a very centralized rotation point in the vehicle because there's no heavy engine. It can snap oversteer. Model Ss have done it forever. And how are you going to catch the car without a steering wheel? That's my biggest concern.
Right.
All right. Our friend Ryan put a round steering wheel on his Model S Plaid, and
yes, great. Ryan Hooper, he's great. Okay, so we need to move on because we still have a ton of cars. Holy crap! And yeah, not so much time. So next on the list is Rivian R1S. So that is the SUV that rides on the same platform as the company's R1T pickup truck. The pickup has been delivered to mostly Rivian employees at this point, though I wouldn't be surprised if non-employees have started receiving them. I've seen pictures of transport trucks loaded with them going into California. The SUV, though, has technically started shipping, but only as far as I know to like the CEO, RJ Scaringe, and maybe the CTO. So delivery for regular customers was recently pushed back from January to March, but those are coming, and they're highly anticipated. When they do arrive, owners should expect a vehicle that's very capable both on road and off. It's a bit shorter than the pickup, so it has a shorter overhang in the back, which means a better departure angle for off roading. So the R1S has an EPA estimated range of 316 miles on 21-inch wheels. With the smaller 20-inch wheels, the range goes down like 10-15%, but it only goes down to 5 or 10% with the larger 22-inch wheels, which is kind of odd. Usually we see, ranges decreasing when you go to larger wheels, but anyway, that's particular to this vehicle. They'll also have a smaller battery version, good for 250 miles, and a longer range version. Probably around 400 plus miles of range as well. The big battery version of the pickup was just delayed until sometime in 2023. So I imagine the R1S Max battery will only be available then as well. But like the truck, this thing is like scary quick, 0 to 60 in 3 seconds. It can tow up to 7,700 pounds, wade through 3 feet of water. Kyle, you've driven the truck, as has Tom. And you have the R1S should be on your list of prospective vehicles to own, I think. It starts around 70 grand. What about this makes it compelling for you? And do you think it'll outsell the pickup?
I don't know. I think it's going to be the new Range Rover of all metropolitan areas. I mean, here in northern Colorado, we have a lot of Suburbans, a lot of Tahoes, Yukons, Escalades, Rovers. And at the end of the day, I think the image of this vehicle is forward-thinking, kinder to the environment. But really, at the end of the day, you just want a nice, big, honking SUV to drive around. And so, I think they're going to be extremely popular, the R1S. It'll be a great mommy wagon to haul the kids around to soccer, to school, whatever. Alyssa really wants this vehicle. This is the one she won't stop talking about. And okay. For me, if it was me, I'd actually go for the truck because – I'm a truck guy at heart. I know it's not really a working vehicle, but I like the idea of the camp kitchen. Now, Rivian has told us, sort of not officially, but in, at least some conversations, that there will be a camp kitchen designed for the SUV. Don't take that as gospel, but somehow they're going to have it probably come out of the back of the vehicle, which for sure is going to take up space somewhere. So there's always give and take. But to me, the truck's really interesting. But I think if we were to purchase one of these, because in 2022, I think you're going to see some out-of-spec vehicle purchases and just transitioning over of our fleet, I think, this is certainly high on the list if we can get one.
Right on. Tom, this isn't on your list, right, of cars. You've got a bunch of pickup trucks on order.
Yeah, I mean, it's not because I don't like it. It's just... there's just so many vehicles I need, and the R1T I can get it sooner than the R1S, and part of that plays into my role because I want to get these vehicles as soon as possible. Want to review them. I want to do comparisons between the F-150 and the R1T. So that's really probably by default why I'm getting the R1T over the R1S. I probably like them equally. They both have advantages. They both have disadvantages. It's not that I don't like the R1S. I think it's a great vehicle. I think the deciding factor was really because I can get the R1T first.
Right. I think it looks great. I can't wait to see it in person. Mm-hmm. So let's move on. We just got a bunch to go through here. So let's talk about the Cadillac Lyriq. So this is a super important car for GM. The Cadillac brand will be the first of GM's brand to go all electric, they say, by 2030. The Lyriq is not only the first Cadillac to be all electric, but it's also the first normal size vehicle using the Ultium battery and powertrain. The Hummer EV also has a version of the Ultium systems, but that feels more like a fringe category of vehicle than the Lyriq. It's like 9,000 pounds. It's like a house on wheels. This is more of a mainstream. So the Lyriq will be the lead vehicle in a parade of similarly sized higher volume vehicles from Buick and Chevrolet. So in any case, Cadillac has a lot riding on this car, and it has to get it right, I feel. Luxury feel, dynamics, adequate performance. It starts at $58,795, which sounds pretty reasonable, excluding destination. The first vehicles will be shipped sometime in the first half of 2022, I would imagine closer to summer than January. And they'll be rear-wheel drive to start. Range is said to be over 300 miles in those, and it can accept a charge rate as high as 190 kilowatts. So not class leading, I don't think, in that regard, but still, there are worse vehicles. It can also charge at home at 19.2 kilowatts, which is great. Cadillac is one of those brands that automotive writers sometimes suggest should be killed. It basically needs a high volume model or two to make it keep worth working, to make it keep it worth keeping around. It's kind of like like the Cayenne was to Porsche. It really saved that the brand, really brought in a lot of money and just helps it create such a strong brand that Porsche is today. And Cadillac could really use a couple home runs like that. So Tom, you've got to see this in person, crawl all over it. Although the charging speed isn't class leading, do you think it's enough luxury at that price point to save the brand?
Yeah, every vehicle that comes out isn't going to be class leading in every category.
Right. Right.
And the Lyriq is supposed to return 200 miles of range in under 30 minutes. That's acceptable to me. It's not fantastic, right, but it's acceptable. A 30-minute stop, 200 more miles, that's another 3 hours of driving or so. And again, we focus a lot on the DC fast charging speeds, and we should. And Kyle and I are really geeks when it comes to, DC fast charging. But you got to remember, the average Cadillac Lyriq owner has a garage and is going to charge at home and probably doesn't do tremendous amounts of road trips. The average driver is what I'm saying. So, for 90% of the people, whether it added 200 miles of range in 18 minutes or 30 minutes, that means nothing. And that would make a difference between me and Kyle saying it's a fantastic charging DC fast charge vehicle and it's okay. So for most people, that really isn't going to make that much of a difference, in my opinion. But what I will say is, yeah, I crawled all around it. I shot this video. You see, I love the vehicle in person. It was one of those vehicles that surprised me. I didn't really see it coming. And once I got in it and sat in it, and saw everything that it offered for, as you said, under $60,000. To me, other than its charging capabilities, and this is a big end, the launch version is only rear-wheel drive. For many people, that's going to be a non-starter, although I think a lot of people that demand all-wheel drive really don't need it, but that's your priority. You could buy something that you don't necessarily need if it makes you feel better. If you don't live in a northern state, if you don't live where you frequently get a lot of snowstorms and so forth, you really don't need all-wheel drive. But anyway, you can get what you want. I think it's a tremendous value. For me, if you're thinking about getting a Model Y, go check, and you don't need all-wheel drive, check out the Lyriq, because it's a much better deal than a Tesla Model Y. Dollar for dollar, you get way more with the Lyriq than you get with the Model Y.
Wow. Yeah, the Model Y, I was just looking at the prices. That's right up in the same neighborhood for the non-performance Model Y, but it's all-wheel drive. But all-wheel drive Cadillac Lyriqs will be coming, I believe, before the end of the year.
Right. We don't have any information on pricing and really the specs on that. But, I thought that this was a great-looking vehicle. I thought the interior was gorgeous and incredibly comfortable, luxurious. I mean, it's two levels above Tesla Model Y on the interior as far as comfort and luxury.
Right. All right. So I don't know if you want to say anything about it, Kyle.
Yeah, I've seen it. It looks better in person than in photos.
Awesome. That's good to know. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
I guess I don't see its relevance, though, but that's just me. I mean, to me, I'm a younger person. The Cadillac brand doesn't really mean anything. It means, blacked out Escalades on 24-inch spinners. That's hilariously awesome to see. But like anything else, I have no brand relation with Cadillac, even though they're like making some of the best sports sedans in the market, manual transmission, supercharged V8s, everything. Right. I love. It just doesn't speak to me, the brand in general. But I don't really like when I go to review the Lyriq, the brand heritage doesn't play into my thinking. I would never say I don't like X brand. I look at each car individually, and I think the Lyriq's going to be an awesome car objectively, and I hope it drives well. Most GMs kind of have their similar driving characteristics. I think it's going to be great.
Awesome. All right, let's move on to something else. So we can sort of talk about the next three cars on our list as a group: the Toyota bZ4X, the Subaru Solterra, and the Lexus RZ450e. The first two are practically identical. The Lexus sits on the same ETNGA platform, but it has a lot of differences. So we'll talk Subaru for a moment, or Toyobu, if you want to put it that way. So besides the badges, the cars differ on the outside, on the front and rear designs. All the other body panels are the same. The enthusiastic cladding around the wheel wells is plastic on the Subaru, but it has like a painted finish on the Toyota. The BZ4X comes in front-wheel drive or all-wheel drive. The Subaru Solterra in the U.S. and I believe Europe as well is all-wheel drive only. I think there's going to be a front-wheel drive version available in Japan. The battery in the front-wheel drive version of the BZ4X is 71.4 kilowatt hours and good for 250 miles of range. It has a 150 kilowatt motor in that version of the car, which is about 201 horsepower. The battery on the all-wheel drive version is like 1.4 kilowatt hours larger because it comes from a different supplier, possibly CATL. The other battery supplier is Prime Planet Energy and Solutions, which is a joint venture between Panasonic and Toyota. So the all-wheel drive's 72.8 kilowatt hour pack powers two 80 kilowatt motors, about 215 horsepower. So it's like up just a little bit on power, even though it's got like double the number of motors because the motors are smaller than in the front-wheel drive version. We don't know the official range yet, but it's likely to be 220, 230 miles. It does 0 to 60 in 7.4 seconds, which is adequate. I've got to see the BZ4X up close and sit in it, and I thought it was very comfortable. Maybe not compelling. I think it needs a low price tag to be like a big success, at least after the supply chain issues are clear up. For now, I'm sure they'll sell everyone they can make. But so the UK price was announced as £41,950, British sterling. I think it needs to be below 40,000 K in the US. I don't know. The all-wheel drive system was designed by Subaru, and it features something called X mode. It has X mode and a feature called grip control. So if you do some light off-roading, these might be a better choice than say like the Volkswagen ID.4. I don't know. Martin, is this price to sell in the UK?
It's like the same 42 grand. Yeah, it's pretty competitive.
It's like the same as the Nissan Ariya, though.
Oh, well, yeah, the Ariya starts at 40 and then goes to 50 and peaks at 60, which is, I mean, anyway, for the Nissan badge, that's not going to work here. The Toyota. So if you ask people further back, I guess, on the adoption curve, not people who watch this show, who makes electric vehicles, Toyota is always, you know, either number one or number two in every survey I see in terms of, you know, it's always Tesla and Toyota. Now, Toyota don't make electric vehicles, so why do they get all the credit for making them? So the average person, I mean, that's not meant to be disparaging, the average consumer doesn't feel about Toyota the way that some people watching this might feel, which is Toyota have spent years and countless dollars and obscene amounts of money trying to lobby against electric vehicles, running adverts against electric vehicles, really hating electric vehicles. Like the average, like the people who don't watch this show will see that one day there's an electric Toyota for sale and they might like it. So we'll wait and see. Now, I will say it's got to be good, because if it's not great, then there's a lot of competition. You know, this isn't 5 years ago. They could have made a pretty average car 5 years ago. It would have sold all right. But you look at the Mazda MX-30. This week, Mazda said that you should buy an MX-30, even though the range is trash. It's fine to own one if you own another car that has quite good range on. And like when the manufacturer is saying, no, buy our car, but make sure you have another one that goes further. Like you've got to a pretty low point in your marketing plan, right? When you're saying, oh, by the way, have something else, but this car's good, buy it. So they screwed up there. And Toyota, if they nail it, they'll be absolutely fine.
Right on.
By the way, the correct pronunciation, because everyone's trying to combine Subaru and Toyota, it's Toyobaru. Because we've done this with BRZ and GT86 before. And so, yeah, Toyobaru.
Toyobaru. Okay. Yeah. Toyota is like the main company too. So they should get the first part of the word. Tom, any thoughts on the Solterra or the BZ4X?
You know, we've been clamoring for Toyota to make all electric vehicle for a long time now, and the numbers look pedestrian. You know, on paper, nothing stands out. I had hope that, you know, they were secretly developing this awesome electrification program, and that when they did come out one day with an electric vehicle, we were all going to be like, holy crap. Like, yeah, that's what Toyota can do. And on paper, it doesn't appear to be that case. It appears that this is kind of like, you know, what many people expected, that they did the minimum they could. They were dragged into this and said, well, we got to make them. So let's make one, and let's, you know, just, you know, make one passable, and we'll make a minimal amount of them, and it'll sell, and, you know, we'll move on. But I haven't sat in the vehicle, haven't driven the vehicle, haven't had a chance to spend time with the vehicle. So I could be pleasantly surprised. As you've seen on the show, I've been surprised with many vehicles that really just kind of snuck up on me. And I was like, wow, this is actually a pretty damn good EV. So maybe that'll be the case on the surface. It doesn't look like that's going to be the case. How many is Toyota going to build? If we get this, we hope to sell 30,000 of them in the first 2 years, then we know, you know, where their real, you know, heart is at. But let's wait and see, get all the details, let us drive it, let us touch it and all that stuff. And then we'll see how many Toyota is planning on making in the first couple of years of production. I mean, Toyota has buying power like, you know, pretty much nobody else. You know, right. Volkswagen Group's bigger than them. They're the only one that's bigger than them. And, you know, Toyota could if they wanted to make hundreds of thousands of these, they could. And let's see what they do.
I think car makers will be forced, these kind of companies will be forced into making them. And Toyota don't need to meet any of the goals. Now, over here, we have the EU CO2 fleet emissions. And so a lot of car companies, to avoid really big fines, have either gone into pooling with other car companies. So it's cheaper to pay Tesla to join their pool and buy some credits. They're not really credits, but it's similar to what you guys have, than pay the EU fines. And we've seen VW do that a lot as well. They do it in China to avoid fines in China. And I think a similar thing is going to be coming to the US starting in the 2023 model year, but ultimately working towards 2026 with the new EPA fleet emissions rules of 55 miles per gallon, I think it is. And so your administration is gradually tightening up these emissions rules. And if you start to get into the realm of fleet emissions, then the tighter you make that, the more these car companies will want to sell you an EV. And Toyota don't, because they would say their hybrids are very clean. And actually, the job that mild hybrid system does, it does work quite well for that one particular set of emissions rules. And so that Toyota, I think, one of the cleanest, if not the cleanest, which seems crazy because they, you know, when cars burn stuff, we can't call them clean, but they had no worries about hitting those EU emissions rules that came in a year ago. So right. I think when these car companies are forced to, you'll be surprised how good an EV they can make. And until then, they'll be reluctant participants, and they'd rather sell you a hybrid car or a petrol car. There's more money in that for them.
Absolutely. And Edward Lawford made a really good comment there. Toyota is a classic case of the innovator's dilemma. I've brought this up on the show before. The Innovator's Dilemma is a really good book. I recommend checking that out. And it is, he's spot on. I'm not going to go into it that deep, but it's basically market leaders that dominate in a certain segment can't reinvent themselves with the next emerging technology, and they're doomed to fail because of that. They're so good at one thing, they don't want to move on to the next thing because they're so good and so profitable. And it's why we see market leaders that dominate a certain field just so quickly fall, and all of a sudden they're irrelevant. Right. And that's a really good, I agree with what Edward said there 100%. I've said this on the show a few times, that The Innovator's Dilemma is a really good book. Check that out, and you might have a better understanding of why Toyota has just fought this electrification wave as much as they have so far, and why they're so reluctant to move on from hybrids, because they're so profitable with hybrids and they make them so well.
All right. Hey, let's talk about the Lexus RZ450e for a second. So it shares the same platform with the bZTERRA. But the exterior and interiors are completely different. We talked about this car a couple weeks ago and didn't have like a lot of details on the drivetrain. So I think we assumed that it would be probably the same as the Solt 4X. Now, Car and Driver is claiming that it will offer a powertrain called Direct 4 and have a 150 kilowatt motor on each axle, which should put out about, you know, altogether 400 horses and about 442 pound-feet of torque, which is kind of like serious levels of power. So it sounds like they're using the BZ4X motor from the front drive version and putting it on both axles of the RZ450E. That should make it a more compelling car, though unless the battery is bigger, I'm worried the range is going to be closer to the 220 mile kind of range, and really not competitive with other offerings in that class. I don't know. Kyle, have you heard anything about this car in the past couple of weeks?
No, I have not, and not sure. Can't provide any comment. I'm sorry.
Okay. I mean, that's, I expect a bit more performance from the Lexus, and, you know, we saw that on the Toyota's big EV day. Toyota's CEO and Lexus president were driving in the RZ450E, and, you know, quite taken with its power output.
Anyway, come on, you would think like you've driven competitor cars before and know what an EV feels like. They've made EVs. Martin made this point last week.
Right.
I don't know. It just seems a little silly. But I will say the Toyota CEO doing donuts in their GR Yaris was pretty cool.
Right. He does like fast cars. So we don't really know what's up exactly with the RZ450E, but I believe it's coming out this year, and we'll be learning all about it, and we'll have that here on the podcast for sure. But we need to move it along. So let's talk about the Kia EV6 for a moment. This sits on the Hyundai EGMP platform, like the Hyundai IONIQ 5 that just started deliveries in the U.S., at least in the ZEV states, plus a few others like Florida, for instance. So I can buy an IONIQ 5 here, and I've seen a few being delivered down here. It's awesome. So it has the 800-volt architecture, so it charges super quick, 10 to 90% in 18 minutes.
Or 80%.
80%, right. So I'm pretty excited about this car. Apparently, some people prefer this over the IONIQ 5, so it's a good alternative. I know, Kyle, I believe you drove this in Europe?
Yes, I did, and was extremely impressed with it. I'm very curious to see how the U.S. adaptations for U.S. spec cars do here. I'm not sure if the cars that are in the U.S. now are the European spec cars just shipped over, or if they're the ones that are adapted for our market. I'm talking about chassis setup, suspension tuning, things like right. that. Motor, battery, I think is going to be the same, is my understanding, and just really, really impressive stuff with this car, really is.
So you drove the IONIQ 5 as well, the North American version of that. What kind of differences do you think are there going to be between two cars?
Yeah, this is going to be a tough one to figure out. I don't know. So generally, Kia is now going to the sportier side. Hyundai is going mainstream, and then Genesis will be the luxury. Is the idea, but they're all good. I have to say, I've now seen EV6, IONIQ 5, and GV60 in person. And was impressed with all of them. GV60 more so than the others, because initially in the photos and that highlighter green, it didn't fit the brand's image. Then it looked pretty good. I'm sure we'll talk about that car. Yeah. It looked good in person. EV6, I was just super blown away with. For me, I'd have IONIQ 5 over EV6. I think it looks funkier. It's cooler, in my opinion. But some people don't want the 1980s pixel styling and the hatchback look.
Right. I had a couple of friends tell me they didn't like the looks of it recently. I'm like, what? I'm all about the IONIQ 5, but I haven't seen it in person yet, like Kyle. So you mentioned the GV60. That is also on the EGMP platform. It's got the 77.4 kilowatt hour battery. There's like three powertrain options, up to 320 kilowatts. So I'm not sure what that translates to off the top of my head. And so that would be like 400 and some horsepower. I wasn't a fan of the exterior styling at launch either. I think they showed it in that fluorescent yellow. But I've grown used to it, and I think that this is going to get a lot of attention. This is also strong competition for the Lexus RZ450E, I think. Better range, faster charging. We'll have to see how they compare, price-wise, but... So it has a sporty feel, but there's a prominent boost button on the steering wheel, but it also has luxury aspects as well. I particularly like the crystal sphere in the center console that rotates around to become the gear selector after you start the car up. It also gets a Vitricity wireless charging system option from the factory, which I think is a great touch. And I think that that's something we'll see more in luxury EVs coming up. Tom, what's your hot take on this fancy Hyundai?
So I got to see one in person.
Okay.
And I thought it looked awesome. And I just remember, as you just brought up, back when it was first introduced in that greenish yellow color, and the four of us kind of were like, what the hell are they doing? This thing looks hideous. And I think a few of us said, but let's wait till we see it in another color. And now look at it. I think it looks great. Like, what a difference a color makes. And in person, I thought it looked awesome too. So, you know, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting behind the wheel of the GV60. I think it's another great entrant that we're going to be getting this year, and I really look forward to checking it out.
A plug for the Asian Petrolhead channel. He's such a good YouTube channel. He drove this week or last week. Face sensor when you walk up to the car does work really well, and he tried to show it a picture on his phone of his face that he took a picture and then tried to show it. It doesn't work. He poured a bucket of water down the side of the car and the door still open, so it'll work in inclement weather, which is kind of interesting. Do we need that? Not really, but it's kind of cool. As Dominic says, it's got nice touches like the little sphere that spins around when the car is ready to go. He was saying the materials in it, I think he drove a production version in Korea, materials are really good, and of course it's got all of the spice that we think we'll probably see with an N version of the Hyundai and the GT version of the Kia EV6. The hot version comes now for the GV60, so that's four seconds. What was it did you just say? And 0 to 60, and he was doing it just been snowing in where he was, and the roads were slippery, and he got a crazy fast 0 to 60. So go and check out that channel. We can't play bits of his video in the show today, but he loved it. Absolutely loved the performance of it.
One thing we didn't mention really quickly, we jumped over on the EV6. I didn't get a chance to mention, terrible location for the charge port. Have you noticed where it is on where Kia put the EV?
Why is it so bad? You just back in and plug in.
In my opinion, it leads to a lot of possibility of damage. That's a typical place where you'd bump if you're reversing and you hit some, or somebody hits you, and a mild accident could just knock the car out of service.
But same for Rivian, right?
Not necessarily.
Why? That's in the exact same spot, just on the front of the car.
Yeah, but I think the bumper sticks out further and you've got more protection on the Rivian. I don't know. Now you'll make me go back and revisit that. I don't like it back there on the rear of the vehicle. I just think charge port shouldn't be on the rear of a vehicle. It leaves a minor fender bender, just can take the car out of service.
I've got to say, I haven't shared this on the, I haven't even shared this on my own podcast yet, but I'll share it today. Before Christmas, I dropped off our toddler at nursery and managed to reverse my car into the nursery manager's Mini, a 3-year-old Mini. And I've not had a low speed accident since I was about 22 years old when I was trying to parallel park. And so that's 20 years ago. I don't know. It was raining. I don't know what was going on. I'd handed him over. He was crying. And I'm thinking, has he got his hat, his coat, his gloves? Have I given him a spare change of clothes? Crunch. And it's like, the car has a reversing camera. It has sensors. I was in a different world. Of course, all my liability. But that accident, because the MG sits higher than a Mini and it was onto her bumper, so I've stoved her bonnet in. But that exact accident has smashed, only smashed my light, which is frustrating. But what Tom just described, what I did 2 weeks ago, probably would have crushed the charge port and maybe had a bunch of stuff that I couldn't have then charged the car. I don't know. But there you go. That's my confession. Please don't tease me too hard that I can't drive in reverse at 5 miles an hour.
Well, I did it once in a parking lot many years ago. I don't even remember what vehicle I was driving. And there was a concrete bollard in a parking lot, and I reversed it and spun it around. And in that exact corner, just crunched my car. And and it
you
probably
feel dumb.
Yeah, you really
dumb,
you know?
When you do.
That's the worst thing. You look around. All right, who saw me just back into a big concrete pole?
No judgment here, but Jordan Schiffers has just joined Kyle, and he's definitely sitting back there judging y'all. Yeah. Oh man. All right, so we got to move along. So Nissan Ariya, late 2022. So we just have the we don't have a lot. Kyle, you've got to see this up close in person and look inside and everything, but no one's driven it yet. The pricing for the UK is out $41,845. That's right, like right in the neighborhood that we were talking earlier about the what was it, Martin?
Entry price. So it starts at 40. For the Ariya, but so yeah, you are slap bang in Model 3 standard range territory and ID4 territory, etc. But I don't know, the spec you want gets towards 60 grand, and
right,
it's a Nissan badge on it,
right? It's kind of hard.
I don't know. I mean, but they are unapologetically calling it premium,
right?
So, all the YouTube videos I've seen from the UK reviewers, the magazines, and stuff like that have gone along. I think the PR people had probably beaten it into them to say the word premium, because they're like, hey, this is already good and the materials are amazing and the infotainment's brilliant and it feels really premium. They keep using that word, but it's got to be.
But you're saying it should have been an Infiniti, is what you're saying.
It should have been an Infiniti.
Shouldn't have been Infiniti. So if you want them, I don't know if anyone's a badge snob or not, but just... I don't know. People walking into a Nissan dealership have got 60 grand on their mind at the time of thinking.
Yeah, but they've sold GTRs for 100 plus.
Sure.
Yeah, the Ariya different is aimed thing, at those kind
what's,
of...
What's the know. Top... What's like the kind of fanciest...
Like a Nismo GTR is like 120, right?
Something yeah, like but that. You think of like more like Muranos, I guess, when you're thinking Nissan. And I don't know if the Murano gets no up in the 60s.
Those. You have Armadas, which are like 80 grand now, if you max it out, 70 grand. So like they're not... It's fine. That I wouldn't say those are premium, but like, okay, at the end of the day, we just need to think of this as it's being positioned as a nicer car than Ioniq 5, ID4, as shown by the pricing. Because if it's not as nice as those cars, then why is it more money? And then the answer will be, hopefully they lease them out really well if it turns out that the MSRP is too high.
Well, they have 200,000 hand raisers for this thing.
How much does it cost to raise your hand?
Probably nothing. I don't know.
Okay, well, there you go.
can I make the point that we discussed this car at length on last year's show? So for that very reason that they haven't given us a car to drive yet, I think we should move on to the next one. Nissan, you failed.
Okay, let's do that. Hey, Mercedes EQE. So we've driven the EQS already. So the EQE is like a slightly smaller version of that, and it looks very similar in the styling. I don't know if we can say a whole lot. I know maybe we can show some pictures of it. But Kyle, you haven't driven this yet? Has anyone driven this?
EQE, no, just EQS is up to this point, and just most recently the AMG version of the EQS, the 53. But EQE is just going to be pretty much the same thing. And just made a little bit smaller, following traditional Mercedes lineup.
Right. I see on our headline here, 660 kilometers of WLTP range. What's that work out into freedom units?
Well, we know it's going to be good because if anything, it's going to be probably more efficient than EQS because it has a similar shape and it's smaller and presumably lighter. Right. And EQS with that 107 kilowatt hour battery pack was consistently charging even after everyone was ripping on it during our media summit to well over 400 miles and sometimes deep into the 400 mile range on the predicted guestometer. Now, that's not a way to calculate range. It's just an indication, of course. But this is going to go pretty far in a charge, even if it has a smaller battery pack.
Right. It's got 410 miles of WLTP range. So I don't know. Maybe it'll hit the 400 mark in EPA. I don't know.
The big question is this less ugly than EQS?
Yes, because the proportions are better.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
It's less ugly.
I think it's worse.
Jordan thinks it's worse.
Oh,
I like it better.
We should listen to Jordan. Is Jordan's house still in one piece, or is it?
Yeah,
smoking.
Yeah.
Good man.
To avoid evacuation. They lifted our evacuation around 11 p.m.
So oh, nice.
Oh man, good.
That's good.
Good. Man, good. So,
man, it's heartbreaking. Like, you know, it was like 580 houses I heard just from that one spot. You know, that's 580 families like looking for a place, you know, to get their lives back together. It's kind of, that's a lot, you know.
Yeah, the huge Tesla service center, I think, has got fire damage now. And
yep, that went up.
My Target's gone. My Costco's gone. So,
jeez.
Yep.
Man, it's crazy. All right.
Kyle escaped the fire also, but as you could see, there was a hurricane in his area. And it affected the inside of his house, not the outside.
Hey, we've been in the process of moving for over a year now.
All right. Hey, so I missed it earlier. Let's talk about the BMW iX and I guess the i4 too, right? That's probably going to come this year as well. Oh, man. I don't know how I missed BMW on my list, but I think the iX is going to be a huge deal. Tom, you've driven it. What can you tell us real quick?
So we talked about the iX a lot last week, and we actually got a bunch of comments. It was interesting. A lot of people, because I had said, if you're interested in a Model X, don't buy it. Go drive the iX first. Then make your decision on which one you like better, because I think personally, for my dollars, I'd take an iX over a Tesla Model X pretty much any day of the week. It even costs less if you look and you option it, you know, next to each other. Yeah, the front is kind of funky. You got to get past that beaver tooth grill.
Right.
But, you know, depending on what color you get it in, it doesn't look as bad. And I know that's, you know, I'm making up excuses. I don't like that front end as much as many people do. Matter of fact, I'm not really a huge fan of the entire exterior styling. I don't think it looks hideous, but I don't think it looks great. It kind of looks chunky. I think, Dom, you're the one that keyed that term. And I think it's very appropriate. But as I mentioned before, look, when I own a car, I'm inside it 90% of the time looking at that. And the BMW iX interior is absolutely stunning, in my opinion, extremely comfortable. It's kind of minimalistic, futuristic. It's got really great texture. They used really interesting materials. And the driving experience was phenomenal for a big, chunky SUV like that. So my money would be on an iX if I were to be getting, you know, an $80,000-$90,000 SUV this year. And, you know, I think it's a fantastic vehicle. The i4 also drove great. As I said last week, I think it's the first legitimate Tesla competitor, like sports sedan, that really, you know, you would compete with Tesla. As I said, again, of course, it's not a Tesla killer, but it is 100% a Tesla competitor. And, you know, as I've said numerous times, I can't wait till Kyle grabs one of them and gets it on the track, because right. I wasn't able to drive it really spirited on winding German roads. But I was, as much as I was able to push it, it was able to do everything that I needed it to do. And I thought it drove great.
And the Dutch BMW team just released a drifting competition in the i4 around one of their wet ovals or wet circles. It was really great.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah, I just think after driving that, I don't know why anyone would buy a BMW 4 Series Grand Coupe. It's better in just about every way.
Yeah, but Tom, it doesn't make pop-pop noises out the exhaust.
But does have that artificial noise.
That's garbage. I don't like fake noise. We had the 4 Series Grand Coupe. It was awesome, right?
I agree.
Oh, yeah, you didn't drive, but it was awesome.
I agree. I don't like fake noise on EVs either, with the exceptions of I don't really hate the Taycans. I don't love it. I turn it off when I drive it. But the new Taycan Sport Turismo sound actually sounds a little bit better. But the BMWs, that Hans Zimmer is their, like, you know, music person that's making these sounds, it actually wasn't terrible on right. both these cars. It was better on the iX. I liked it a little bit better than what they tried to do on the i4, but it wasn't terrible. I found myself putting it on for a little bit, then of getting sick of it pretty quickly and turning it off. I think it's really meant for if you're on a track and you want that audible feedback. I don't think you'd really use it if you were just cruising down the highway. But if you're really driving it spiritedly, you might want a little bit of feedback.
It's funny, on paper, you know, the i4 really can't touch the Tesla Model 3 performance, but like in real, because it's like a lot heavier, but in actual use and real, it holds up really well, right?
Yeah, it's not as fast as the Model 3 performance, and you know, this is kind of in between a Model 3 and a Model S, in my opinion. It's bigger than a Model 3, you know, when it's much more luxurious than you know, either of those, in my opinion. The new iDrive 8 was pretty snappy. It was easy to navigate. You know, I've never been a huge fan of BMW's iDrive, but they do keep getting better with each iteration. They are improving them in this latest version, which the i4 and iX are the first two vehicles to get the new iDrive system. I thought it worked pretty well.
All right, so we're getting down to the bottom of things, but there's still like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5
Let's rip through them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we don't have, there's not a whole lot about we can say about them. The Porsche Macan EV, late 2022, we hope. That's on the not on the same platform as the Porsche Taycan, which is on the J1 platform. This is on something called the PPE platform, and it's going to be very similar looking to the traditional Macan, which is like a big seller for Porsche.
The Audi Q6 e-tron as well. Again, a really great couple of cars coming, I think, and but probably very optimistic to say this year. I don't know. Maybe they're at advanced stages of testing them. I don't know.
They are. And also, I think this is going to be the most important car for Porsche in the last 10 years. This will define them going forward. So hopefully they do it right.
Even more important than Taycan? I think Taycan
was... more important.
Yeah. More people will buy this.
More people will buy this. My mom drives a Macan now, right? She's had a few of them. She loves them. This is right up her alley. There's so many people like that. The car has to be premium, has to go fast, sure, has to be comfortable, and priced well. Macan starts at like 49 grand. It's not expensive. Right. So, you know, this is the car for the brand.
Not expensive for a premium car. That's expensive for
Porsche,
people like
I
me.
Think it's one of the cheaper ones. It's like Cayman or a Macan is entry level.
Definitely. I think Taycan was more important because they had to prove that Porsche could do electric vehicles, and they proved that really well. So now they have to follow it up with a volume EV.
They will.
That's where they make their money.
Yep, they will.
They need to make money. So the Audi Q6 is the Audi version of this car on the same PPE platform. And yeah, we don't have a whole lot of info about it. We have like this picture of it in camo, and we're just like hoping it gets to the end of the year. I think like the Taycan situation, the Audi version will probably be just like a tad softer, like in the Taycan and the Audi GT e-tron.
Yeah, 100%. This would just be less spicy than the Porsche. I think there was that danger with the Taycan and the e-tron GT of them converging a bit. And we've talked about this before. I think they made quite efforts, maybe even after launch, but certainly just before the launch, to ensure that these two cars just went further apart. And of course, they do drive very differently. Like the Taycan is a proper performance car, but I think they did tune them specifically because I think at some point in that development, there was a danger they were going to be too similar. I think exactly the same with this as well. But, you know, Macan's not going to be a hardcore track car, but still, I think this will be a less spicy version of that if you're a fan of the Audi brand and the styling and the badge on the front.
Man, I'm really looking forward to these two cars, and I really, really want to get behind the wheel.
Huge sellers. And I think they'll get them right because the platform looks really good.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's a second gen. I mean, they can take what they've learned from, you know, making the J1 platform and the MEB platform, and maybe they have some insight from their tie up with Rimac. So,
well, yeah, even look at the new e-tron that's coming this year. The mid cycle refresh e-tron is adding 100 miles of range because of the tech that they can put in the battery and the efficiencies from the motors and all of the, you know, the inverters,
exactly,
et cetera.
Exactly.
Learned a huge amount.
Macan will have greater range than Taycan.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. So next we have the Hyundai Ioniq 6. So this is based, we've only seen the concept of this, which was the Prophecy concept, which is, I believe, you know, just a beautiful, beautiful car. I'm not sure it's going to translate super well to, it's hard to say because it's covered in cladding and who knows. But man, the concept was just so nice. But anyway, we'll see. And again, this is on the eGMP platform. So, we know it'll charge really well. And it'll go farther probably than the Ioniq 5 or the, you know, GV60 or the Kia EV6 because it just has a more aerodynamic profile, lower roof height, I would imagine. And it probably maybe longer. I'm not sure. I don't know, anything to say about the Ioniq 6? There's not a whole lot out there about it, so.
Will it, if they make it this year, I'll be really surprised again. But they say production over summer, so maybe they will.
Yeah, production starts in May or June, so that's, I don't know if that's like trial production, where they make, you know, 1,000 units or whatever, just to, for whatever reason.
It's that segment of i4 Model 3 performance is looking really interesting, around 50 grand, 60 grand, if you want that kind of sedan. Or even a hatchback, which this will be, I think, is super, super competitive, which is what we've wanted for years, right?
Right. It's going to be sporty for sure. I mean, it'll have sport performance for sure. I mean, yeah, we've seen that in the GT and the EV6 GT. Oh, maybe I've had too much of this Jägermeister.
It's early for you guys.
I know, it's super early. Good morning. So next we have the, we just have two cars, and they're kind of... They're made in the same factory on the same platform. It's the Polestar 3 and the Volvo XC90 Recharge successor, which we don't know if it's going to be called the XC90, but we've only seen the Embla. Polestar 3 in camo, which we've got on the screen if you're watching this on YouTube. And it looks, well, it's hard to tell exactly, but it looks pretty good even with camo on it. I don't know.
Yeah, it's cool. Massive seller. If Polestar start making a really good SUV, and by then, you know, the service network starts to develop more. People start seeing them on the roads. You know, the Polestar 1 was a while ago now, and so that brand starts. Oh, that Polestar's been around forever. So I know they want this fresh start, and that, you know, whatever their catchphrase is, we have no heritage or something weird. But yeah, absolutely. That by the time they get onto an SUV, it's going to look fantastic for that brand.
Hey, so we have Jordan in the background there. Any predictions for this year? Like, what's the car are you looking forward to most this year?
Honestly, that Volvo, although I don't know if we'll get to touch it this year. Actually, on that Polestar, that the camo doesn't bother me too much. It's like a giant QR code on wheels.
Right.
Kind of interesting. But yeah, I'm most excited to see Rivian R1S in person.
Okay.
Especially after driving some of its gas competitors, I just think the R1S is going to be stunning. And the R1T was impressive.
Right. But, did you drive the R1T?
Nope. I just rode it a few times.
Okay. But you have a good, yeah, you have a good feel of it, at least from that perspective.
Yeah, I love it.
Right on. Yeah. And the Volvo XC90 Recharge, I think that's going to be a potentially could be a big deal.
It's not going to look like that though. It's going to be the next gen.
Yeah.
Right,
XC90, which I can't wait for. That's going to be awesome.
And made in America, in North Carolina, right? South Carolina.
Yep, oops. At an amazing facility.
I need to cough.
How, Kyle, do you feel about them moving away from XC90 to names? We think it's going to be called the Embla. I like XC90 as a name.
The Volvo naming's perfect because it goes 40, 60, 90. You know the size of everything. It makes sense. XC means it's the off-roady one. C is like the slopey one, and then S is a sedan, obviously. So it just makes sense. V is for wagon. I really can't wait for an electric Volvo wagon, although in speaking with some of the Volvo guys when I was over there in Sweden recently, it doesn't sound like we're going to get any of them here in the U.S., at least as priority. But Europe should have like a V90 wagon or something like this that's fully electric soon. Nice. Can't wait for this. And yeah, as soon as I can import one in 25 years is the law. That's what I'll be driving because I love Volvo wagons. But yeah, I mean, I really have to get going here pretty soon, but I am just so excited for this next year's worth of cars. And yeah, it's going to be amazing. Although this year was stellar. We had some amazing cars come out in 2021. Really some big hit reviews. We had Rivians, we had Lucid, we had Ioniq 5 just in the last few months. It's been insane.
Right. It's true. We didn't really talk about the cars of 2021 so much, but there are some great ones. Any real quick, Tom or Martin, cars from this year that you really liked?
I think we talked a little bit about that last week. You know, I mean, there's so many great cars that came out this year. As Kyle said, this was been a watershed year, and 2022 is going to be even better. But since we mentioned Lucid really quickly, I know a lot of people, I had promised the 70 mile an hour highway range test on the Lucid Air. I had that scheduled. I had to cancel it once because it had bad weather. Then I were rescheduling it. Then I got COVID. So now it's looking like we're looking second week in January. So I'm hoping to have the opportunity to to show you guys what it can do at a constant 70 miles an hour. That's still going to take a couple of weeks.
And Dom, I can't believe you missed the AMI off your list.
Oh, Kyle.
I changed the name of our list to cars that you can buy in 2022 that you can't outrun.
So. I just feel bad for this car for missing out on the list. So honorable mention.
Right, honorable mention. This is Kyle's favorite car.
It's not even a car.
You're going to have one though, right?
Yeah. So when you come over, it might not be by the time you come over, but maybe not.
Yeah, but that might have to get postponed with the situation going on.
Yeah, we had 180,000 COVID cases yesterday. It's just silly. And we're a small country. Right. And so
we had 500,000, Martin.
Oh, God. Yeah. You're multiples bigger than us. So maybe we'll postpone that. But yeah, Kyle, when you come over to the UK, we'll play with the Citroen. Ami.
They really need to make this spec, though. If you're watching us on YouTube or Twitch, you can see. What was this called again, Kyle?
The buggy concept, I think, is something. Sweet. Yeah, there it says right, the buggy concept. But okay, I got to jump off. It was great to see you guys. I'm really sorry. But
no problem.
See you next year.
Okay, let's just say goodbye to everybody. Oh. So let's happy 2022. Happy New Year. And it's going to be a great one. That brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. And don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. You can follow Tom Logney at TomLog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. Jordan, real quick, what's your Twitter?
Gordon_Schieffer.
I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe, please. And great to see our live audience today. 347 people right now. Happy New Year to y'all. Thanks for tuning in this morning. Really, really, really appreciate it. Click subscribe. Tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Happy New Year.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.